Whew. What is in this eggnog?
Oh, it's moonshine. This is my mom's favorite recipe. The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
Bon Natale!
We are the Wild and Pretty Guys!
Well, they're both festive, aren't they?
And we are the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Say, Mark.
Hi, Bob. You know what? I'm wearing an extra layer. It's a little chilly.
It's getting chilly out there. It was. And it was pretty chilly when we were golfing, wasn't it?
You know what? I set so many course records. I don't think anyone has played the fifth hole from behind the green, behind the pond, behind the tree.
And when I was thinking chilly, I was like, I think the reception was rather chilly from the other members of my foursome doing my golfing. You know, I've never claimed to be a good golfer. And I have to share this story because, you know, Bill Hsu, our good friend Bill Hsu, was in my foursome. And I always tell the story about the first time we went golfing with our sons when they were in high school. And Bill and I didn't know each other that well, and we go to the golf course, and I didn't have clubs, but my father-in-law, who had passed on, I took his clubs, and I had them in my basement, so I'm like, okay, I'll take these clubs, and, you know, we had to wipe off the cobwebs and everything, the dust off them, so we get out on the golf course, and I go to hit the ball, and Bill's like, wow, are you left-handed? And I said, no. And he goes, those are left-handed clubs. And I said, well, there are left-handed clubs? And Mark, I haven't gotten much better, as you saw. Just
That's the great thing about, well, Bob and I, we did a golf outing to support the local football team. And so it's a, you know, it's best ball. So, you know, as long as you have at least one or two people on your team who can hit the ball regularly, it's very competitive. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good cause.
We had Coach Eric with us, which was great.
You know, it was a lot of, yeah, he's a, you know.
No Lena, though.
No Lena. Lena didn't come. Jackson didn't come.
No.
But yeah, it was a good time for all and good cause. And like I said, it's one or two shots every 18 holes you play, though. We're like, huh, I've taken 120 swings, but those two were so good, I could be somebody someday.
Well, you know, my whole goal when I play, you know, with best ball is just one time I want them to have to use mine. One time, just. And I'm still waiting for that time, but it's going to come. I tell you, I know it is.
I looked across the fairway and I saw your foursome. I think they were loving you.
Yeah, they were loving, ready to push me right into the water hazards there. But we are on to, and Mark, can you believe it's like almost end of September? We're heading into October, which, as we both discussed, it is our really favorite time of year, from a season's perspective, the weather, the trees, the changing of the colors and all that. And of course you start thinking, and I've been thinking about this since our last show, because we had Anna and the Apocalypse and the zombies, and I'm still thinking about that show. And now going into Halloween time, and I thought, there are these other niche, you know, Christmas horror films. And you know, I struggle with them. Like, are these Christmassy? Are these not? And what do you think? I mean, I can think of just off the top of my head, Black Christmas, Silent Night, Deadly Night, you know, all of the, should we do more of them?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, again, stretching our imagination, you know, when you know, if we think about, well, I should say how I grew up or what I saw, like there wasn't really very many, all the Christmas stories seem to be the same. So I don't know if I'd say we have to do more, but we shouldn't be afraid to embrace them, right? We shouldn't be afraid to embrace any movie that someone's put the effort into. I just think that's a talent that I admire so much. But you know, horror and Christmas is probably the biggest stretch I've ever thought about when it comes to watching a movie. But hey, Silent Night, Deadly Night, it was a good movie.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen it, but the one thing you do, if you know, we're looking at the foreign films, they oftentimes have demons, monsters, yeah, things that we haven't seen that they're very familiar with. So that kind of is interesting, adds a perspective you're not used to. But well, the good thing is tonight we're not doing a Christmas horror movie. Should we talk about our movie?
Yes. Yeah, let's talk about it.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
It came out in 2005. It's a Czech film. It is Andel Panya, or Angel of the Lord. It is, it's very much not a horror movie. Kind of, I would describe it as a, we'll go into a little bit, but movie that has some comedy in it, some good versus evil, some good acting. I think the movie starts off a little slow, but then I think really picks up. But let's talk about
It's kind of a morality play too. That, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then, so in this movie, Ivan Toen plays Patronel. And Patronel is the main character. Ivan is a Czech actor who's widely considered to be one of the greatest Czech actors of all time.
Now, watching it, he was really good. I would never have thought that, though.
I'd agree. Yeah. I would agree. He sort of had a Three Stooges,
yeah,
Wilder kind of look to him. But he's won 4 Best Actor Awards and 2 Best Supporting Actor Awards, making him the most awarded Czech performer ever.
And he does. He looks like Larry from the Three Stooges.
Right? I mean, in the beginning?
Yeah.
Actually, you know, there is a sequel of this, right? Angel of the Lord 2,
wow,
or Patrel Panya 2. So he also maintains the role in that sequel. Also in that sequel is Yuri Dvorya. Yuri plays Devil Yoris, or the devil, right? So Ivan is the angel. Ivan is the angel and Yur is the devil, but he's a Czech actor, but has not done much film work outside of Czech. He's provided quite a few dubbing for American films. But again, he does come back in the sequel to play the devil again.
And you know what's funny? You say Ivan is the, I would have thought he was the more celebrated. He, you know what I mean? He seems more actor-like, you know what I mean? And he has that little, his devilish grin and his asides and all that. I would have just, for some reason, thought he was the actor.
And we'll get into the movie, but you know, Patronel is sort of supposed to be this clumsy, he's just not very good at being an angel. And so I think, maybe that's how well of an actor he was, right?
Exactly.
Because you're like, this guy's a dud. And then again, lots of other characters, but the other one I would call out is Zuzana Karanova. She plays Dortka. Dortka is sort of the love interest of the prince who Petronella ends up going to try to save. But she's a popular actor in both TV and film in Czech. Zuzana also appeared. Has not appeared in any English-speaking films, but she's been gained critical acclaim and attention to her appearance as Dortka in this very successful fairy tale. So, you know, there's not a lot of actors and characters in this film, but the angel, the devil, and the lady in distress, or the good person, right? She's sort of the the angel on earth, if you will.
And it's a, this is kind of a unique structure compared to any of the movies we've seen before, because it's more like you just described. It's like a fairy tale.
It is. It's very much like a fairy tale. And you know, you know, when we're reviewing these films, sometimes I find myself texting Bob or vice versa. In this case, after I watched this film, we happened to be playing pickleball. And I said, you know, Bob, for the first 5 minutes in this movie, I wasn't sure. But there's a scene where, you know, it starts out, it's in heaven, right? Petronella is sitting there sleeping. He's snoring. I mean, obviously, he's sleeping in heaven, however that happens. And running around are our other little children. It turns out Mary, blessed the Virgin Mary's there and is trying to convince Jesus to, you know, come to breakfast. But he's like, no, Mom, I'm running outside. I'm playing. And she's like, who are you playing with? He's like, I'm going to go play with my friend Judas. And she said, well, don't come back crying again. And I thought, wow.
We're in for a ride.
Wow. I shouldn't be laughing. My mom would be mad if I was laughing, but that was pretty funny. Yeah. But let's talk about it. So up in heaven, right, Petronelle feels like he's misunderstood and unfairly treated. You know, he kind of complains to God, which I think is, you know, pretty ballsy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm going to complain
to God.
That's
something you see every day.
It's not. But he complains to God that he really hasn't been given a chance to prove himself, right? That he's really much better than he is. And you know what? God, being omnipresent and very forgiving, says, you know, okay, I'm going to give you an opportunity here. St. Peter needs to take a break. He's going to go off for the weekend, maybe go do a little vacationing. I'm going to let you be the keeper of the pearly gates. And Petronella was like, oh, thank you, God. I will not let you fail. And so at the gate, Petronella meets the devil, Urias, who I guess, I didn't realize this at the pearly gates. Maybe you did, Bob, that the devil is there to get the rejects.
Never seen that before, but it was.
Never did.
And they kind of have a, you know, they're coworkers.
Yeah,
you know?
A friendly rapport, right? Yeah. And so, you know, a couple of people come up to the pearly gates. Petronelle, you know, quickly sort of doesn't do any really due diligence of who they are and just says, nope, you're done. And then the devil snaps his fingers and down they go to hell, right? And so,
isn't that a classic? You give someone some authority, hard line. He's not bending the rules. You know, this is how I'm going to run it now.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's just so funny how he condemned somebody who I'd say is equivalent to Mother Teresa to hell. I was like, wow. You know, so he dismisses a few folks who apparently, what my perspective would be, were worthy of going to heaven. But the devil casts them down into hell. And then he distracts Petronella by saying, hey, why don't we play a card game? Which I think the card game was called Marriage,
yeah.
which I thought was funny. So they begin to play this card game, and they're not neglecting. People are pounding on the pearly gates to get in. And Petronella's just sitting there playing with the devil, going back and forth, playing their game. And then God comes back in, and he says, and also I think it's very funny, too, how Mary also yells at God, like, stop taking your own name in vain.
And as an aside, isn't it great that they don't make God like, God's just kind of like a regular guy too, yeah. You know what I mean? He's like just, you know, you can tell he's like maybe a boss figure, but not, you know, they didn't make him bigger than life or anything. He was just pretty.
And he's always calm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, he's. Which I guess some expect God to be.
Yeah.
But he's frustrated. He's disappointed in Petronelle. You know, which I also thought it was funny too. God is sort of yelling at Petronelle for not yelling, but saying, what happened here? What does Petronelle do? He blames God.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says, you know, you're too easy on these people.
You're
you know,
running a loose shop here. Yeah.
And, you know, and he sort of like, you know, so anyway, he takes no accountability for what has just happened. And so God said, you know what, we need to do something different here. And so what God decides to do is sets sends Petronella down to Earth and says, you have one day to go to Earth. And he goes down as sort of this poor monk. Petronella is now sort of a poor monk. And he said he has one day to find a sinner and help him, help them repent. Mm-hmm. And if he could do that, then he could stay in heaven. If he doesn't, then he's, you know, cast to hell.
Yeah, he has to go to hell.
He has to go to hell. And I think what's also interesting is that God also, I guess, has authority over the devil, because he sent the devil, Urias, down to help Petronelle sort of figure this out.
And it's a funny thought. He's to go along with him. Now, you'd think he wants Petronelle to come to hell. You'd think that's his objective, right? But I'm not so sure he does. You can't really tell. He's like a friendly devil, and he kind of is like, this guy doesn't know what he's going to do on Earth. I'll kind of be like his guide, but not necessarily a helpful guide, but a guide.
Yeah, I mean, I think he sets Petronelle up a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So meanwhile, right on Earth, right, there's a Count Maximilian, who's very rich. He sort of drinks all afternoon, parties all night, and then comes home oftentimes in the wee hours of the morning. And the staff has to put him to bed and feed him. And of course, we find out that the staff's robbing him blind. So the administrator, the guy who takes care of the castle and all the business there, is ripping him off. The handmaiden who runs the house, she's ripping him off. And so the Petronelle knocks on the door saying, I'm this poor, lonely monk who's hungry on Christmas Eve, right? Can you help and feed me? Dortica, again, the earthly angel, like, of course we can help you, Father. Please come in, have something to eat. Well, the housekeeper, or the head housekeeper, and the guy who keeps up with all the affairs, the administrator, I think they keep calling him, says, no, absolutely not, and casts him away, right? And so they finally realize, or he finally realizes, like, oh, wow, like, oh, and Maximilian meets the monk and sort of mocks him, right? Like, yes. You know, why am I going to help you? I can help other people. And so Petronelle and the devil have now identified maybe some potential sinners who need repenting.
Yes.
So they go off into the wood, and this is where, is the devil Urias really helping?
Yes.
Right? Because, you know, Petronelle's like, well, how can I help them? I'll just give them what they want. And the devil's like, that's a good idea. And if you just tap my satchel, you can get them whatever they want. Right. And so, you know, Maximilian, he wants to be sort of on his own, not really known or anything. And so Petronelle turns him into a beggar. The magistrate, or the administrator rather, right, he wants to find love. And so he turns and makes Dortica the eye of his affection. And then for the head housekeeper, she wants to be rich. And so she opens up her chest of drawers and all these coins come out, right? And so he's excited, right? Because he's found these three people who need help. And so he is going to, he feels like, my job.
Yeah, he's ready to go back. Yeah.
He's like, you know what? That was like, it's 20 minutes. So I'm going to go to the church. I'm going to go in. I'm going to kneel at the altar. And God will be there to send me the elevator up, right? And so the devil sort of is like, I'm not sure. But still, they tramp off through the woods into the church. And Petronelle goes in. He's at the altar. You know, he's kind of waiting, twiddling his thumbs, you know, whistling a little bit. And the Blessed Mary appears and says, Petronelle, what are you doing? He's like, I gave them everything they want, right? And she's like, I don't think you really looked deep into this. I don't think you really gave them what they want. You're looking for the shortcut. You're just trying to satisfy yourself, right? You need to do a better job here. And I think Petronelle is like, he's confused. Like, yeah. Well, what do you mean, right? Like, I thought to make somebody happy and to repent, you just give them what they want. And she sends him off sort of, and you could tell, like, I think he's obviously more disappointed about not meeting Mary's expectations. I think maybe more than even God's expectations.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So Mary, you know, ascends back up And Petronell goes back out and says, okay, now what am I going to do?
And the devil, of course, knew he wasn't going anywhere, thought it was pretty funny.
Exactly. Right. He's kind of enjoying himself in the background. So as the movie evolves, really what it's about is, so Dortica, who really loves Maximilian, right, is being pursued by the administrator, who is sort of this greedy guy who's sort of not worthy of her love. Maximilian, meanwhile, is arrested for being a beggar and is in prison and is going to be executed on Christmas Day for being a beggar.
And also gets an insight into how the people who he rules are being treated.
That's right. That's a great subplot where he's as a beggar and he hears them talking about himself and they're not recognize him. Dortica, in the meantime, she gets set up by the head housemaiden as the person who's stealing things from the Maximilian. And so they set her up. They put some silver forks, some coins in her. They arrest her for being a thief. But then the administrator says, throw her in jail, but then also says, well, if you'll marry me, I'll get you out of jail. And so now she's
classic proposal.
Classic proposal. she's now in the dungeon on one side. The opposite side is the beggar, aka Maximilian, right? She doesn't necessarily recognize him at first. He recognizes her. And, you know, he starts talking to her about, like, why are you here? What are you here for? And she's, you know, talks about how she's been accused of stealing. I've never stolen. I would never steal from Maximilian. I love him. I just, you know, he's the apple of my eye. The beggar, who's not really sure, she doesn't know what the beggar is. Maximilian's like, it's me, Dortica. It's me. I am Maximilian. And she's a little hesitant at first, but then he starts revealing things that only he would know. And then she realizes, so that's him. And so here they are, right, both facing possible death, long imprisonment. The administrator shows up and says, well, what's it going to be? Are you going to marry me or are you going to spend a year in the dungeon? And her driving force to get out of the dungeon was really not about her. It was about her dad, right? She did not want the daughter of a good man to be accused of being a theft or being somebody who steals.
Because I think that brings him down too, right?
It brings him down.
Yeah.
Yep. And so, like, she does not want to marry the administrator, but she feels like the only way out to keep her family name pure, she agrees to it. And so they go off and they're getting ready. Meanwhile, Petronell and the devil realize they have to sort of undo everything. So they find their way into the jail, which I think is also fun along the way too, is along the way as they need help, Petronell is praying to different saints. So there's a saint of prison,
yes,
who gets them through the prison wall. Later, there's water they have to cross. So he prays to the saint of ice and the water turns to ice. I mean, there's just some really cute comical things in there along the way, but they penetrate the cell. They get there, they talk to Maximilian. They know who they now know. He knows that they know his identity, excuse me. And so they start to contrive a little bit, like, how are we going to fix all this, right? And Maximilian's like, Dortica cannot marry that man, right? She loves me. I love her. We have to undo this. And so they set out on their way to get back up to the castle. It's sort of getting to be Christmas Eve, right? The 24 hours, right? Keeps going back to the sand clock. What's it called? The sand?
Yeah, like an hourglass.
Hourglass, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, the hourglass, and it's dripping away. Yeah. And Petronell's doing everything he can to sort of right all the wrongs down on Earth. And in the end, right, he gets there. He's running out of time. But for this to really work, there's also one other funny scene where the administrator's going to marry Dortica, and they kiss, and Petronell's like, oh no, I was too late. But really, it was the devil acting like a priest who married him. She's like, that marriage is null and void. The devil can't marry people. But to get everything done and to get her away from all the evil, the time slips away. He doesn't actually get a sinner to repent in time, or at least that's what you think, right? So, you know, the Dortica, Maximilian, they're going to go off and live happily ever after. But, you know, all of a sudden Petronella is expecting to go to hell, and it's actually the Lord greets Petronella and said, you know, welcome back. And Petronella's like, well, wait a minute, I didn't succeed. And he said, you did, right? You became selfless. You put the other people in front of you. And, you know, you're forgiven for all your past transgressions. So welcome back to heaven. And it was just a really cute movie.
Well, and what I loved about that was that is a fairly common storyline where, you know, your redemption is the fact that you do something that's selfless. This is a very, like, it's structured very black and white, good versus evil, fairy tale like, but I didn't see that. I didn't see it coming, and I should have. That what he did, the sinner he saved was himself, essentially.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And I missed all that. But you got to describe the last scene of the movie.
Oh, the nativity scene?
Yeah, the birthday party.
So, I mean, the film really is a fairy tale, right? Which has that moral piece to it. You know, many of the fairy tales that have been adopted into movies around Christmas sort of have that theme to it. But the end of the scene, which is going to be interesting later when we talk about it, is sort of the nativity scene, right? So Petronelle, Mary, God, St. Nicholas, or Mikolas, as they say in Czech, are all there. And off in the distance in a cloud is the three wise men coming, right? So almost recreating the nativity scene. And when the three wise men get closer, they have this big birthday cake for Jesus.
It's a great way to end it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I mean, just a really cute movie. But let's talk about it. I mean, Bob, does this make your Christmas passing?
Mark, absolutely. You know what? I was like you when you said it started slow. I remember when I first watched it, I thought, what the heck is this? You know what I mean? And because the way it starts in, you're just like, you're unsure of it. By the end of it, I'm like, this is so charming and has so many great elements to it that, I mean, it's a simple story. I get it, but I loved it.
I did too. And again, in retrospect, I think Ivan is a good actor in that he plays this bumbling, fumbling, you know, or as Chris Berman say, rumbling, bumbling, fumbling angel. But you're just sort of, you're drawn to him.
Yeah, he does it so well. You're right. I think he's such a good actor that at first he drove me crazy.
How'd you feel after that movie?
You know, it is one of the things, like, you know, happy. You watch it and you go, you know, maybe at the end you go, I should have seen all this come together, but I didn't. It was kind of, and they added just little elements to it and little, like the devil turning out to be the priest, all that stuff. And you're just like, oh, you know, it's kind of witty, kind of charming, wrapped up in a kid's story. And that in itself gives it appeal. I loved it. I mean, I really enjoyed it.
I did too. I felt the same way. Like, I just felt like, you know, even though it's not Christmas time yet, after I watched that movie, it felt like Christmas time. Like, this is a movie I could watch and would watch again. And I, like, at the end of it, I'd be like people around, if they haven't seen it, will probably have that. Oh, that's so cute. That's so sweet.
Yeah. And that's so, like, when you talk about future, I would definitely watch it. And I definitely watch it right around Christmas, because that ending scene, it may sound a little goofy, you know, with them bringing the kid, but it was so funny and so enjoyable. Like, and they all start singing happy birthday. Yeah. It's great.
Well, we're talking about 2 minutes about the nativity scene and how that important it is in Czech culture. So would you recommend this to others to watch?
Hands down. And what I would say, a little bit of caution, go, you know what? Get past the first 10 minutes, but pay attention because there are some funny parts in that first 10, but I think you're getting the hand like you're in heaven and what's this? And yeah, but it once you're in for a great time.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. So do you know how to say Merry Christmas in Czech?
No. Did they even say it in there? Oh yeah, they did. At the end. Yeah.
I also think it's. I'm sorry. I just went back to how Petra know about like how clumsy he is when he tries to sing with the children's choir. Yeah. He's like so many octaves too low. But anyway, to say Merry Christmas in Czech, it's Vesele Vánoce.
Vesele Vánoce.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to you too. Thank you. But let's talk about the culture, right? Because the nativity scene at the end, I think it's very interesting because nativity scenes are a very important part of Czech Christmas. In the Vasioni region, some families have constructed their nativity scenes for more than 200 years.
The same like family?
The same family.
Wow.
In East Bohemia, there's a nativity scene that has been declared a national cultural heritage. And it has been completed over 100 years ago and has over 2,000 carved components and a mechanism that puts everything into motion. So, you know, knowing that and then knowing that the end of the scene, right, the end of the movie is a nativity scene, sort of brings that culture aspect to it.
That's incredible. And yeah, now you see why it's in heaven. Like, right. You know what I mean? That's perfect. Yep.
Czech children believe that baby Jesus, or as they say in Czech, Yajis, is the one who delivers the present. Although there is concern that Santa Claus is sort of seeping into that the Christmas culture.
That seems to be happening around the world a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember my parents complaining about that, right from the 60s and 70s. Yeah. And Sam, baby Yajis flies through the window on Christmas Eve to give the children the gift. However, no one had a picture of what baby Jesus looked like, and nobody knows where he lives. And a bell was rung to announce that the gifts have arrived on Christmas Eve, on the 24th.
You know what? So if you think about it, if we didn't know what Santa Claus looked like or where he lived, so many of the things that we think about Christmas and talk about are in the songs and all, you couldn't really... you know what I mean? No. Like there would be no pictures of him. So that is very interesting. You know, it takes away some of that marketing aspect, which might be a good thing.
It might. Yeah. Cause it, you think about it, it's like when you read a book, sometimes you have to imagine what's happening versus seeing the movie. But in this case, I paused on that minute and thought maybe that's kind of a good thing, right? That you're left up to your imagination as to what, baby Jesus would look like if he came into your house.
He's not pounding a Coca-Cola.
And then also Mikuláš is Czech for St. Nicholas, and on St. Nicholas Day visits the homes to judge the children's behavior. So he's coming in, and he comes with two friends, an angel and a devil.
just like
the movie. The angel gives the kids candy if they're good. But if you're bad, the devil threatens to put them in a sack. Remember a couple movies ago? Oh, it was Rare Export. They put the kids in a sack.
Yes, yeah.
They put the kids in a sack and they're going to be taken to hell. And the devil costume. So typically these people are playing the devil and the angel and coming along with Saint Nicholas are just sort of neighborhood people, right? They're playing the tradition. But the devil... we'll let the kids sort of get out of it if they will do a poem or sing a song, right? If they don't do anything really good, what they will end up with is not necessarily going to hell, but they get a potato.
That is punishment. I agree. A raw potato.
But I think also what's interesting is the people who play the devil and like I said, the angel are usually typically friends or neighborhood people. And to thank those people for sort of being part of the tradition, they'll feed them or give them drink. So if you think about it, by the end of the day, the people who show up at your house might be slurring their speech a little bit.
Mark, so we talked about, I think, Rare Exports with dressing like goats and getting our neighbor's alcohol. Maybe, you know, I'll be a goat and you could be a devil. Or, gosh, we have so much to look forward to.
We have so much money to be made during the Christmas holiday. So, but good movie, right? But, you know, knowing the traditions a little bit, maybe as our listeners would now watch the movie, like, I found it even more enhancing.
Yeah, more meaningful.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
And what I love is that you're taking these customs and tying it back to the movie. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Want to hear a song?
I'd love to hear a song.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
Our choice of today is a slightly more modern Christmas song, sung by a woman named Uwa Farna, excuse me. Uwa Farna was born in the Czech Republic and is one of the youngest singers on the Czech music scene. And the song tonight that we're going to be hearing is Christmas in Peace, or Vánoce Amarillo. I said that like I was Italian. Vánoce Amarillo.
I thought it sounded very good.
But it's a very cute song. Why don't we give it a listen? We can talk a little bit more about it after we hear some of it.
Mark, how did you make yourself sound like a children's chorus? That was awesome.
I have so many talents, Bob. You know, this I think it's a very, very pretty song. It first was released in 2017, and in 5 years has become one of the most popular Christmas songs in Czech radio. It's now considered a classic and then hit the top of charts in just last year, in 2022. Also, I would suggest to the listeners, and Bob, if you have any chance, go out to YouTube and watch the video. It's really tender. Oh. I mean, it shows kids shopping with their grandparents and baking cookies with grandma and couples walking down the street. And it just sort of gives you that nice feeling. And how can you not love a song with a children's choir in the background? And so listen to the song, but I would say listen it and as you watch the video, because the video sort of brings together, I think, the whole message of the song.
Mark, you know, I knew in this podcast we would discover new movies and fun, really interesting movies. I didn't realize the music was going to be as great as it is, and this has been just such a really fun experience to listen to these songs and go, I really like that. I don't know what they're saying. I love it.
It is. Well, you know, the melodies, the melody and the music. I agree. So Bob, we've been at this for quite a few months here, and we've learned about other cultures. But one thing I think is interesting is, right, some cultures are Christmas Eve, some are Christmas Day, right? We just heard about the Czechs, that they are more about Christmas Eve and the bell being rung when, mm-hmm. when the presents are delivered. What's bigger for you, Christmas Day or Christmas Eve? And maybe it's, I think we touched on it before, is it different for you now than it was when you were growing up?
And that's what I was thinking about. I would say, as a kid, now you're going to find this so fun. Mary Ellen thinks this is hilarious, but so we had seven kids, and we never went out to a restaurant or anything when we had all these kids. It just back then it wasn't as common. But on Christmas Eve, we would actually go out to a smorgasbord. We would go out. I remember the place we used to go was called the Viking Table, and it was never been to a smorgasbord. We'd go, and that's where we would have Christmas Eve. We'd dress up. I'd have a little suit on and stuff. And so Christmas Eve, when I was a kid, was the big Now, what I would say as with my own family, and it's more of Mary Ellen's, I think, religious upbringing. Mm-hmm. For her, we have a wonderful time. In fact, a very, very fun time. And I might still say Christmas Eve is like the party part mm-hmm. of the night. But for her, it's church. It's the dinner. It's Christmas Day is the importance. That's the significance.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. You know, Christmas Eve. So growing up, again, Christmas Eve for us was about preparation. You know, my mom and dad, you know, I come from very humble upbringing. And our Christmas Eve tradition was, you know, we would kind of be bustling around all day, but my dad would bring home the tree on Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow.
And on Christmas Eve, right, so we didn't have any big dinner or anything, but we put up our Christmas tree.
And decorate it?
We did not decorate it.
Oh.
Interesting thing was, is that my mom and dad, and sometimes the kids, we'd put the lights on it, then each child got to put one ornament on it, and then we went to bed. And so then on Christmas morning, we came down, the dazzling, sparkling tree was just overwhelming to us. It was just so beautiful. You know, as a kid, I just thought, wow, this is awesome. You know, what I found out years later as I grew up and stuff is the reason they started that tradition was financial. That they really couldn't afford to buy a Christmas tree at full price. And so on Christmas Eve, my dad would go out to tree lots.
Oh, wow.
And get the lowest possible price for the Christmas tree so his family could have a Christmas tree.
And in my head, I was thinking, your poor parents, because I'm like, it's hard enough getting the gifts out,
yeah.
but decorating the tree, and wow,
yeah.
that's an all-nighter.
Yeah, and they talked about that, you know, as we got older and sort of the whole Santa Claus thing went away. But I will tell you, as a child, coming down and seeing the Christmas tree, and in some ways, to be honest with you, like we didn't have a lot of presents under our tree, and we had all the love, and I mean, I was never left unwanting, but it was... But again, it was like the, oh my God, like that when that hit you on Christmas morning, it was awesome.
That's
so
great.
But then, as we got married and soon I got married and stuff, we do now celebrate more on Christmas Eve because of her family tradition. It also allows us to sort of come together, have our traditional Polish meal, which we talked about a few movies ago. So
great. Yeah. That's good. That's exciting. That's a great question too.
It is a great, yeah. Thanks. I still have fond memories of those trees. So I'll leave with a quote. This is from J.R.R. Tolkien.
Oh, Lord of the Rings.
I thought it was appropriate quote because of the Angel of the Lord movie we listened to today. If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world.
You know, it's like, be more like a hobbit and not like the dragon.
Right. Don't have bad hobbits growing up.
Well, thank you, Mark. Once again, it's been incredible.
Thanks, Bob. Let's put on our stocking hats and head home.
Yes. Yes. We want to hear from you. You guys chime in, rate us, send us messages. We take care packages, whatever.
Actually, we're done.
Done.
It's over. Over, over. It's over.
It's over, kaput, finito.
It's over. It's over. It's over.
This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.